the reason this is such a big deal is we have this big, messy, wonderful country where we fight with each other all the time, but nobody tells us what to think, what to fight about, what to vote for, except other Americans. But we're talking about a foreign government that, using technical intrusion and lots of other methods, tried to shape the way we think, we vote, we act. They want to undermine our credibility in the face of the world. They think that this great experiment of ours is a threat to them, and so they're going to try to run it down and dirty it up as much as possible.
Britain's shock election result throwing the Brexit process into deeper confusion. Prime Minister Theresa May said she called the vote to strengthen her hand going into the talks. But with the Conservatives losing seats, that gambit has failed.
At this time, more than anything else, this country needs a period of stability. And if the Conservative Party has won the most votes, then it will be incumbent on us to ensure that we have that period of stability, and that is exactly what we will do.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is June 9th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you here for our Friday edition of the program, another business day. Lots to cover this morning. You heard in the opening montage there, the situation in the UK is something we're watching very closely. The Prime Minister there says she will not resign. The latest on this morning, she will not resign and will go to the Queen to seek permission to form a government, resisting calls for her to resign. Theresa May, after the election, left a hung parliament, no party with a clear majority there, the shock British election, or snap election, that left no party with a single clear claim to power, did hit sterling, the pound, and left the dollar on course for its best week in over a month. World shares headed toward their first weekly fall since April as well. It's as good a place as any to start on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. First in Europe, looks like most of the indices are recovering just a bit, or have recovered just a little bit. The FTSE is up almost three quarters. The DAX is up 56 points. The CAC is up about 21 points, which is almost a half a percent. In Asia, markets are generally mixed. In this country, futures pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street a little bit later on. The Dow futures up 36. NASDAQ and S&P futures up in the single digits. Oil at $45.81 a barrel, which is up almost a third. Some of the stories we're watching for you, in addition to the election yesterday, the news out of Tokyo that the Japanese internet solar and technology company SoftBank has agreed to buy Boston Dynamics from Alphabet, Google's parent company. The term of the deal has not been disclosed. SoftBank, which offers that Pepper companion robot, said the purchase underlines how robots are key to part of its business. Boston Dynamics, you may recognize them. They have all those sort of weird robot, dog-looking, creature-looking robots that they test. Some of them walk on four legs. Others look like snakes. This is a big deal because this is one of the big research robotic research firms. Boston Dynamics going to the Japanese firm SoftBank this morning. Later on today, the CEO of Apple will deliver the commencement address at Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Tim Cook scheduled to address graduates and their families a little bit later on this morning. He's been the CEO at Apple since 2011, overseeing the rollout of iPhone 7, Apple Watch, and also other Macintosh-type computers. It's unclear what he'll say today, but you can bet he'll focus on tech. This has been a big week for Apple after their tech conference this week. Let's bring in our regular Friday guest, Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He's a senior vice president, senior portfolio manager at Kingsview. Paul's with us every Friday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Well, it's good to be with you. It seems like every time we are talking, it's in the aftermath of some crazy election. Here we go again in the UK. What are the immediate economic concerns about this? We talked about the dollar a little bit, but what else is happening?
You know, really, the dollar is the big focus here, and that was the big mover. We really haven't seen it, as you highlighted earlier. We haven't seen it in the equity markets. We're not seeing it in the fixed income markets. And really, I think the longer-term implication, certainly as one of the British commentators made note of, that the snap election that she called in order to strengthen her hand, actually weakened her hand, is going to be determining to see what happens with Brexit and how that gets negotiated. So this now puts her in a much weaker position to negotiate with the rest of Europe for the British exit.
Yeah, and this, I think I saw 10 days is when the first real solid talks on that begin. So there's just about a week or so for her to get, or somebody to get some sort of government in order to continue on with those talks. So that could be a big deal.
And that could be. And again, we'll have to see how things unfold. We're still, we're about a year into the process that we think will probably take at least another year to 2 years to unfold. So we have a lot of things that can be happening between now and then. So it's something to look at, but I'm not getting real concerned about it yet to where we want to rearrange portfolios and start to sell off equities.
So what if you've seen this week, the markets don't seem to be doing much. It seems they've been flat all week watching all of the political concerns around the world. Is that a fair assessment of what you've seen on Wall Street?
It is, and it's been that way now for a little while. The markets, the volatility of the markets, whether you look at the indicator VIX or if you just look at the day-to-day change, has been very, very quiet for the last couple weeks. And I think the markets are waiting for better, more economic data that's going to point to how the economy is doing. We saw the unemployment report a little disappointing last week. In general, the economic data has come in a little worse than many expect, but not terrible. So we're still stuck with an economy that's growing at roughly 2% a year. And again, not enough really to get the stock market excited one way or the other. Inflation continues to be rather modest. So equities are kind of stuck in a trading range, and we're likely to be here until we start to see some good economic data or very bad economic data move the markets one way or the other. But we're stuck in a range, I think, for a while.
I know you put a clock on it this week, and what was your final figure of the net move that we've seen in trading this week?
I think it was less than a quarter of 1% for 4 days. So you're seeing, virtually nothing.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, financial companies led stock indexes higher Thursday, nudging the NASDAQ composite 24 points up to a record high 6321. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 9 points to 21,182. The S&P 500 gained half a point. Today, Wall Street's eyes will be on Great Britain, where Theresa May's Conservative Party failed to gain a majority of votes in the House of Commons. Some investors worry that the results of yesterday's special election may weaken the next government's hand in Brexit negotiations. Meanwhile, our own lower house has voted to loosen regulations on lending institutions put in place after the 2008 financial crisis. Republican lawmakers argued that Dodd-Frank hampered the economy by making it harder for small banks to lend money. And graduation season continues today with Apple CEO Tim Cook delivering the commencement address at MIT. The university president says Cook was picked for the honor because of his business brilliance and his passion for social issues. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 522. We're on with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management this morning. Paul, we saw the ECB, the European Central Bank, decision this week. How big of an impact did that have on markets here and there?
Again, not too much, but there was a tone to the discussion that they are slowly and at a glacial pace moving a little bit more toward unwinding all of the accommodations that they've been making over the last 4 or 5 years or so. So they're following the U.S., they're following the Fed, but at a very, very slow pace. So that's something to take a look at probably over the next year or so to see if they change their tune. The economic growth in Europe is doing better. Inflation is a little bit higher, but not to the point yet where the ECB feels comfortable taking some of the very aggressive monetary measures off the table.
We saw some data from the Philly Fed talking about manufacturing sector. The news there is not good, is it?
No, it's not. We've been losing manufacturing for a long time now, and really we are much more of a service economy. So when you take a look at the underlying indexes, the shift has been much more service-oriented. So when we take a look, and I think that has an impact, too, on the jobs data that we look at. when we look at wage growth and some of the other ones, manufacturing typically has much better wages, much better wage growth in general than the service economy does. And I think that's part of the dynamic that we've been seeing in some of the unemployment numbers. But overall, the economy there, when we take a look at the Philly Fed data, has been okay, again, supporting modest economic growth. But we're seeing a bigger shift in the overall economic makeup, much more towards service than we are manufacturing.
You mentioned earlier in our conversation the GDP numbers, the growth numbers, nowhere near where we're hoping, or at least the Trump administration is hoping, that it will be. I know we've heard a lot of talk about 3%. What would it really, honestly, what would it take to get to that level? Is that even possible?
Well, there's a couple dynamics that go to economic growth. One is going to be the growth of the number of people being employed, so the overall population. And our population growth has really flatlined. It's much less than 1%. So economic the growth in population is a key driver. The other is productivity. And we've seen productivity come down by a lot of different measures over the last decade. So productivity figures are how efficient, how well is one individual producing goods or services. We're seeing that come down as well. So those two are key dynamics that need to turn around. And that's part of the reason why many economists look at immigration as a good driver in the United States, and certainly different than what the policies or the direction, at least, of the administration is, but immigration will help overall GDP. And then we need productivity, and that has been in about a 10-year decline now since the peak in 1999. That has really yet to reverse. We need to see that pick up in order for us to get the GDP growth around 3%. But because of the overall dynamics of our demographic makeup, it's going to be very hard for us to sustain 3%. We may hit it every quarter once or twice, but it's not anything I think that we'll be able to sustain because of the demographics.
And that sustain part is the key word there, because in order for some of these economic policies to be successful, at least the proposed policies, that is necessary to be there permanently, or at least for a while.
Right, right. So again, very different dynamic economically and from a productivity perspective than where we were in the 80s or 90s, where we did see that occur much more frequently. We're not likely to see that as much. And it's the same dynamic that we're seeing in Japan and in Europe. It's going to be very difficult, again, because of those same reasons, to see that type of growth in those countries as well.
So as we look at our portfolios here at the end of the week, not much change. Should we be worried about anything else?
Not really. As a portfolio manager, we're always worried about something. And really, one of the things that we've seen coming out of the election was a big jump in the markets. And that really has stopped since the end of February, early March. The markets have continued to go higher, but what's interesting is the bond market has gone higher as well, meaning yields have come down, bond prices have gone up. So when we compare how stock returns and bond returns have been, they're roughly on equal footing. So as much as we talked about the stock market making new all-time highs recently, the bond market has done a pretty good job of rallying. So again, a portfolio that's diversified, has some bonds in it, some stocks in it, has held up really pretty well here. We're not ready to make any shifts, but it's one that we keep an eye on when bonds do well relative to stocks, and we've seen that over the last couple months here.
All right. Paul Nolte, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Paul Nolte is Senior Vice President, Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can check him out online at kingsview.com.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Glad to have you here with us. The latest rankings of the biggest profitable brands in the world is out, and Google is at the top again. The title retained for 7 out of the past 11 years. The brand value, just over $245 billion, increased about 7% from 2016. We're going to look at some of the top brands here. We thought we'd bring in Nicole Ertes, the founder of Ertes Group and the author of Free Range Brands. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. This list comes out, every year, and it ranks, the most profitable, the most valuable brands. Any surprises here to you?
We expect to see the top tech brands on here. We're seeing them more and more, but Amazon really shooting up and Walmart down at number 31. Not surprising, but very telling. And a company called Tencent, a Chinese company that's on this list, which is really growing quickly and really disrupting not only mobile, but also gaming and retail now.
One of the others on there that folks here in the Chicago area will recognize is McDonald's in there, at number 10 or number 8?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing, I think there's a significant departure between many of the Google, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Tencent. But what we see is McDonald's slipping, Visa slipping, AT&T slipping. They're still up there, but they're really in a different category now. I mean, these brands that are really taking shape and sitting at the top of this list consistently, the common denominator they have is that they're really creating a full-on consumer ecosystem. And they're extending well beyond predefined category lines. This just isn't B2B or B2C anymore. These brands are simply not comparable to a Ford or a Coke or McDonald's. They're really going after, getting your user data. And to do that, what they need to do is create a brand that has a full-on relationship with their consumers. And so they're just setting themselves in a complete league apart.
And I should say McDonald's is number 10. I got that one wrong. Nicole, when we've talked before about your free-range brands ideas, are there any free-range brands in this list, in these top lists that you see?
There are. We see Adidas and Domino's and Netflix and Shell. These brands have led with very purpose-driven. They're very humanizing. They have a very strong element of trust underpinning what they bring forth. But what's more interesting to note is who we're not seeing on this list. I mean, this really is a measure of public companies. And so we've got the disruptors, that live in the public setting. But what we're not seeing are the disruptors in the sharing economy, Uber, Lyft, Airbnb. And when we think about brands and the real brands that are developing these relationships with consumers and that are doing everything that you need to do from what I would call a free-range brand perspective, these brands just simply aren't even on this list.
Yeah, and that's a good point because does anybody gauge what they're doing? I know you and I have been talking about it and some others might be talking about it, but is there a list of anybody else that's grading some of these free-range brands?
No, I guess just free-range brands. I mean, we're really looking at how they are different than the traditional brands. And so this list is probably more of the traditional brand. We do see a lot of traditional brands borrowing some tactics from what these younger, more up-and-coming brands are doing, much more humanizing, much more focused on bringing forth purpose. And we see a lot of that. In fact, the brands that are doing that are actually climbing up this list much faster than the brands that aren't doing that. But there's a lot to learn, I think, even from these top 10 on this list for the smaller brands that might just be more traditional brands.
Because I bet you would argue that there's more than the bottom line when it comes to gauging your interaction and your success with consumers.
Well, it all ultimately does matter, the bottom line, as we know. But brands that scored at the top third of meaningful difference versus the bottom third in this list, anyway, had a difference of bottom line of 207% growth versus a 47% in value. So there's obviously a correlation between building that brand and investing in that brand and your bottom line. But ultimately, I think what a lot of marketers need to remember is that a brand isn't just a set of features and benefits. It really is a relationship. And today, in order to build a relationship, you really need to be interactive and conversational with your audience. because the brands that continue to keep up the walls and hide behind functional attributes are really just becoming increasingly commodified and dehumanized, and ultimately they're becoming irrelevant, and they're getting substituted by brands that feel more human.
Nicole, on another topic here, as we move into the summer months, June is a Gay Pride Month. I've noticed on Twitter and other social media, I'm seeing a lot of different companies change their logos to add the rainbow flag and to have more positive messages with this. How do we know when these companies are really serious and actually, taking part in this, as opposed to just taking advantage of that moniker?
Well, you bring up a really good point. The way we ultimately know is how it plays out and the way that they behave. But what we know, just evidenced by, what we saw the last time we spoke around United, is it doesn't take much for any brand to be called out on that public stage as a brand that isn't true to what it claims it values. And this really gets back to that point of building that relationship and humanizing a brand and staying true to what you value. And this is going to make the difference, especially with this younger generation, as to how they, what they value in a brand. Because more and more, you can find anything you want anywhere. There are very few brands that really have something completely new and different, sustainable year after year. And without developing that relationship and without sticking to what you value and being true to that, it really does put a brand in a very difficult position to try to regain that trust. And we're in an era where trust is critical in this era of transparency. And what's really interesting to note is how the other side of trust really can be fear, So the other side of seduction, these brands like Google and Apple, they really seduce their consumers. But yet on the flip side, consumers can be spooked or investment communities can be spooked very easily. We saw that with Alexa. There was a lot of hype around Alexa in the beginning, but then suddenly there was the question of when is Alexa not listening to you? And can I even trust this device in my home? Or when is Facebook's news not fake? And we see that elevated. We saw a lot of pushback on Google when ad content was being placed next to extremist YouTube content. So you start to question these brands, and everybody's keeping a very watchful eye on what these brands are doing, and are they a brand you can trust? Because as they get bigger and as they become more infiltrated into your world, that element of trust gets higher and higher.
And not only that, once you have lost trust in a brand, it's hard to get it back. I know just from a consumer standpoint, once a company loses me, they've lost me for forever.
That's right. That's right. And I think more and more companies are realizing that, but it's surprising how many simple mistakes or obvious mistakes they're still making. This is a growing issue, I would say, with Amazon, because I'm hearing more and more, a lot of counterfeit, a lot of knockoff sellers. And when we think about, what really made Whole Foods a brand that people trusted in the beginning, and now a younger startup called Thrive Market, when we think about retailers where we want to go to shop, a lot of brands are built because of the retailers that stand behind them. And people don't have to worry about what brand they're buying because they know it's endorsed by a retailer. And when Amazon grows and we're seeing more and more knockoffs, you start to wonder if you can trust the brand behind it. And so this is an issue for Amazon. I think they need to watch out there.
Nicole, good to talk with you as always. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right. Nicole Ertis is the founder of Ertis Group and the author of Free Range Brands.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures up about 33 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are pointing positive as well. Just a reminder that we normally talk to Rick Cini on Friday. He was off this week. He hopefully will be back next Friday here on the Opening Bell. Time to check agriculture and commodities this morning. Orion Samuelson standing by with that. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning, Steve. It's been quite a week in the grain market particularly, and today is report day. The June supply-demand report will be out this morning at 11 o'clock, issued by the Department of Agriculture, and traders will be watching that as we get the latest report on really what we have in the bin here in the country in wheat, corn, and soybeans. But yesterday, it was an interesting day with a strong gain in all of the grains, in the corn and in the wheat, and also in the soybeans. Corn futures hitting their highest level in nearly a year. And Minneapolis spring wheat hitting a two-year top. Concerns still about hot and dry weather stressing crops in the northern plains and the Midwest. I guess we're in for a pretty hot weekend in the Midwest, and it could be dry once again. Although they're saying that early next week, North Dakota, which is the biggest spring wheat state in the country, should be getting rain. But, well, let's put it this way. Tom Fritz is with the EFG group in Chicago. He said yesterday this is our first weather scare of the season, and the market was just too short going in, so we've got them on the run. And I think we saw a tremendous amount of cash movement yesterday, both old crop and new crop. But the other thing, the trading volume in corn futures on Wednesday hit an all-time high of over a million contracts. And that sort of showed that index funds were rolling positions forward, as well as some pretty active farmers selling. And then in the soybean market, a record soybean import number by China. That's the biggest buyer of American soybeans. And imports rose in May by 25% from a year earlier. That's the highest import number by China in soybeans on record. And so a lot going on. And of course, June is a little early for a weather scare, but it's there. And it's there particularly in the spring wheat area of the North Dakota and South Dakota. So, Steve, you need to make it rain a little bit in those states this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, even here in the Chicago area, I heard yesterday that we're sort of we could use a couple of good, nice rainfalls as well. Hard to imagine that it seems like we've gotten a lot of rain so far this spring, but how are farmers here in Illinois looking at the weather?
Well, it's a mixed bag in Illinois because from north to south, you get quite a change. There's always a weather concern during the crop season, but it's a little early for one. Although last year we had an early weather rally, particularly in the soybean crop in June, and it looks like we had a little bit of that yesterday. Looking at livestock, Father's Day coming up, and normally that is a big beef buying time because Beef for Father's Day is a campaign that cattle folks have carried on now for years, and so we did see the beef market close mixed yesterday, but generally a little bit higher in the beef market. So keeping an eye on that. Meanwhile, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue stays on the go. This week he was in Canada, I think, to at least sit down face-to-face with the Canadian Minister of Agriculture and talk about the NAFTA situation. If indeed we do get the renegotiating of NAFTA, that's an important situation for Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And the other thing, Secretary Perdue keeps traveling. He was in Boise, Idaho a week ago. Well, today he'll be down in Mississippi. He'll be at the Delta State University, Cleveland, Mississippi, Performing Arts Center to deliver an address at the 82nd Annual Delta Council meeting. So he continues to be busy.
All right. Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, June 9th, 2017. One report from the Commerce Department later today breaking down wholesale trade inventories for April. Today's the day the Department of Labor rule requiring retirement advisors to abide by the fiduciary standard, putting their clients' best interest before their profits take effect. President Trump will hold a roundtable at the Transportation Department talking about roads, rails, regulatory relief, and infrastructure. As Orion mentioned, the Foreign Agriculture Service and the U.S. Department of Ag has its latest world agriculture production stats. We'll see U.S. production stats as well. The International Olympic Committee will hold a meeting today. The executive board will convene to discuss the possibility of awarding both the 2024 and the 2028 games at the same time. And Apple CEO Tim Cook will give the commencement address at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, on Friday. So some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, June 9th, 2017.